What up, guys? Welcome back to the Mac Effect. Your host here, Mike. Like always, thanking you guys for tuning in, for coming in, you know, giving your time, giving love to this podcast. For me, always grateful, because just the love, the support is something that I need, that fuels me so that we can keep going, keep delivering, and keep giving you guys the best of what I can offer, which is to help each other. I'm learning the same way you guys are learning. To develop, I'm developing the same way you guys are developing. And to not be in the same place we were last year. And I'm not going to be there, and I hope you guys are not there as well. With that said, that's the reason why we line up great interviews, great conversations, and today's episode is no different. So with that being said, sit tight, enjoy the conversation. We have some great stuff for you guys. We'll see you in a bit. Great guest, a great friend. She's a friend of my sister's, but is becoming my friend, Trisha. Trisha, thank you for joining.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Well, Trisha, the reason why we came to the conclusion of bringing you, and I say we because my sister was mentioning you, she told me about your story. And Mike is a big person that follows stories. Because one thing that God has taught me is that we all have great stories. It's just, for whatever reason, I mean, I get it. We're in a world where the ones that get the attention are the celebrities, the famous people, and whatnot, right? But so many people in this world go through pain, go through suffering, go through victories, and we don't know about these stories, and we don't connect. We really feel like we're the only ones going through these times by ourselves.
For sure.
That's what this podcast is. To share to people, we don't have to go through it alone. We know exactly what that feels like. I might not know exactly that situation, but I hoping that I bring a guest that can connect, and maybe someone can reach out to you, someone can reach out to me, and we continue to grow. Absolutely. So that's why we're here. So Trisha,
Yes. Tell
me a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background. You know, where were you raised? Where did you grow up? Your parents?
Yeah, I grew up in La Mirada, Whittier area.
Okay.
I went to Lucerna High School.
Shout out Lucerna.
That's right, go Lancers. I grew up with one brother. He's a couple years older than me, mom and dad. When I was 8 years old, my mom was diagnosed with melanoma. It was stage 4 at that point, and she was told that she would be lucky to have 6 months.
Wow.
So naturally that kind of defined and shaped the rest of my childhood.
How old were you?
I was 8.
8. Wow.
She lived 9 years. So she beat every doctor's estimation. She beat every statistic. She was a fighter.
Amen.
But having a mom dying of cancer your whole childhood definitely shapes the type of person you are.
Yeah. So. Wow. Did you notice it impact your dad at all?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, our whole family was definitely impacted. So one of the things my mom did is that she would do research. She would find clinical studies across the country, and then she would just apply to them and would get accepted into them, which was incredible.
Okay.
But that meant both my mom and my dad would be gone for sometimes weeks.
Wow.
In Texas, in D.C., and, you know, various locations doing the clinical trials.
Got it.
To try to beat the cancer.
And just to kind of understand, so for 9 years she battled and beat the odds. This was since you were a baby then, or was it when you were 8 years old and you still had her 9 more years after that?
That's correct.
Okay, got it.
She was diagnosed when I was 8 and then passed away when I was 17.
Got it. Okay. So definitely at an age where you're transitioning, where you're going through your hormonal changes, a time where, you know, you need your mom as well, like any kid. Okay. And how was that? How was high school? Because your mom's battling through this and you're going to high school. How were those days for you?
So it's layers, lots of layers there. It definitely, you know, it impacted our family hugely because there were times where my mom, let me take a step back because my mom was super mom. Like she was Mrs. La Mirada. Everybody knew her. Like our household was the household that kids were at all summer long.
Wow.
And part of that I realize now as an adult and a working parent, the cancer allowed her to play that role in our lives. She did work before she was diagnosed. And obviously after the diagnosis, because of all the medical appointments, she no longer worked, which gave us, you know, this incredibly hands-on involved mom who never let us see how severely she was suffering. Mm. But I took on a caregiver role because without her working, my dad worked all the time. He's an electrician. So he was, you know, trying to get those extra hours to pay for all the medical expenses and being the sole breadwinner for the household. So I took on a lot of responsibility and self-inflicted. I've now realized I've done a lot of really focusing on my healing and healing that childhood trauma and accepting that childhood trauma can exist even with the world's most outstanding parents.
Yeah.
My parents did a great job. I'm still a little messed up about my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that being messed up by that has influenced every single friendship, relationship, occupation that I've had because I developed this need or this belief that my value was based on how I could take care of people.
Interesting. I love it. I love it. I love what you're sharing because you're mentioning like, you know, with parents together, I still had childhood trauma. And I had a discussion with one of my friends. He's like, what's so important about digging into your past and looking for past trauma? It's the past. He's like, you're a better father than your dad was, right? And I'm like, yeah, that's the goal. And then he's like, so your kids are not going to grow up with trauma? And I said, no, they are. I'm still going to traumatize them one way or another. He's like, and I'm like, but the goal is to understand why. And what's interesting or what's kind of making me be curious, it's what awakened the curiosity for you? Because I'm hearing you say things like, you know, I started healing. I started figuring out inner child trauma. When did you discover this? Because we live in a world where not a lot of people know that they have it and they're kind of just living life. So when did that kind of click for Trisha to say, oh man, that's a mommy issue. That's a daddy issue.
Just recently within the last year, actually. And like I said, I think for me, every time I heard childhood trauma, I thought abuse, I thought neglect, I thought
so good
homelessness.
Yeah.
And so I never felt like I got to claim childhood trauma because yes, my mom died, but we always had a home and we always had food on our plates. And so for the longest time, I just didn't really even enter into that arena.
I love it.
And last, I would say fall, winter, I was dating a man and I realized that I was like self-imposing, feeling like a burden. He had asked me to come over. It was after a long day of work. We were just watching a movie and he kept yawning. And I kept saying, like, you know what? I should leave. You're tired. I should leave. And he said, no, stay. And 5 minutes later, he yawns again. I said, you know what? You're tired. You had a long day. Like, let me get out of your hair. And he stopped me and he said, Trisha, I asked you to come over. I want you to be here. Yes, I'm tired. But I wouldn't have asked you to come over if I didn't want you next to me.
Mm.
And I ended up leaving maybe 30 minutes later. And I woke up the next day and I was like, why did I do that? Like, why did I feel so obligated to give this person space and time and sleep when they're the ones that initiated me coming over in the first place?
Yep.
And that started my deep dive.
I love it. And guys, if you're listening, you're watching in previous episodes, and I'm not just talking about one episode, two episodes, three episodes, I'm talking in multiple episodes, I have shared there's no wrong question to ask. That's the perfect example of what I'm trying to get to, guys. It's we just got to start asking questions. Why did I do that? How come? Why was my reaction that strong? Like, I remember when people would tell me, well, you're not a man because you're not a provider financially. Years ago, that would hit me to my gut, to my core, and like shake me.
Right.
Now, now I laugh because God has really healed me to the point where it's like, dude, there's so much more in providing than financial. And of course, financial is a big responsibility, and I will, and I have. But when you start asking the right questions, because then I started asking the question, am I? And God really started healing. So right now that you said that, I'm like, I love it, because that's what like intrigues me. It's like that process of like, I asked that question. So you asked that question.
I did.
What was the response?
So I felt compelled to journal after I asked myself that. Love and it. I am not typically a journaler, and I don't know why. I don't know why I don't think of that as like being a stress release, because it absolutely is every time I do it. But I started journaling, and at first it was about this man.
Mm-hmm.
Like my journaling was like, why did this man make me feel this way? What has he done in our relationship that made me feel so uncomfortable?
Good.
And in doing that, you know, I listed some of the things, and to be completely honest, like I've looked back at this journal since and been a little embarrassed, because I sounded like, you know, that anxious girl in dating. You know, one of them was like, I haven't met your friends yet. Why not? You know, like these are the questions I'm journaling. And then I don't really know how, but then it turned into me journaling to 13-year-old Trisha. Because 13-year-old Trisha, I think for me, was the point in my life that I was forced into adulthood.
Wow.
That's when the cancer had spread so much that it wasn't, it was now impacting my mom's everything.
Mm-hmm.
Her ability to drive, her ability to, you know, cook, clean. She had like wounds that needed bandages changed, and like that was my job every day. You know, I always joke, like, I got my license on my 16th birthday, and part of that was so that I could take my mom to her appointments.
Wow.
Which I was totally happy to do that. Like, there was never a minute where I felt like life was unfair because I was taking care of my mom. I didn't realize I was a caregiver at all. You know, it was not until this part of my life, multiple failed relationships, and then this one seemingly innocent interaction that kind of forced me to get into it. And the conclusion in that journaling session was, I am so stinking proud of 13-year-old Trisha. And I am so, I wouldn't be me today without her.
Look it. I love it.
But it also was really unfair for her. And now as a parent and seeing my child and seeing the really simple joys of childhood that I missed out on. And one example of this was that, you know, my mom came to me one time, and at the time I was a competitive cheerleader. I was a competitive ice skater, and I was a competitive but not as strong dancer. And my mom said, hey, because of finances and because of, you know, scheduling, we need you to cut back. I quit all three sports.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, in the last year, I've realized my parents didn't ask me to quit those sports. My parents asked me to maybe choose one or two. And because I took it upon myself to feel like if I kept doing my activities, I would burden my mom, that started a cycle of constantly feeling like my needs should not come first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, like, I want to be very clear. My parents did nothing to perpetuate that. I was hiding my emotions from them.
Yeah. So. I love it. I mean, you're the perfect example of what I talk about, what I preach about, what I share. Again, I kid you not, in previous episodes, I have shared multiple times, get a journal and write stuff down. And you would think, like, how does this help? Like, my spouse just left me. They cheated. They lied. They betrayed. Breakup. My mom, my father, you know, they passed away, a family member, like whatever situation you're in, why the heck would a journal help? And I say it helps because you get to let all of it out. Even if it's like you mentioned, like looking back at it, mm-hmm. I haven't looked back at mine. I'm a little bit scared to, maybe because I'm still healing, still going through the process, but nevertheless, one day I will. And I know one day I'm going to look back and be like, whoa, bro, like you were very lost. Like you were very, like had no idea what was going on. But it allowed me to get things off my chest. It allowed me to say, you effing this, God, I've cussed out God. So have I. People are like, how dare you? And it's like, I'm real. And that's my father. Yeah. My father's going to, well, one, I am sorry. But two, it's like, it's my dad. Like, he's going to tell me, it's okay. Let it all out. I'm still going to be here. And then that's the example God gives me. Now it's my turn to give that to my kids and move forward, right? So anyways, though, as I'm hearing you, the journal, guys, take notes. You don't have to write down every nugget we give you, but take note. I would strongly suggest go and get a journal. Oh, I'm not going through anything. Get a journal. Write stuff down. I promise you, little by little, things are going to come out. And I and all these things that you're saying, like when you started journaling, were you already like speaking to like a therapist or something? Or was this just hunger Trisha was feeling?
This was hunger that I was feeling.
Wow. Wow. You were sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Absolutely.
Guys, do we want change? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Yeah. Trisha, I don't know if you've heard these words before, but I feel it in the Holy Spirit. I'm so proud of you. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
You were sick and tired, and you said, I will not live in insanity.
Yeah.
And it cost something very difficult for you.
Ooh, I've never cried so much in my life. I mean, it was about 4 weeks of just daily, excuse me, letting it out. And I'm not like a crier about my own self. Like, I will cry every single dog commercial that there is. But I don't cry about my own stuff.
Yeah.
Until last November.
Wow.
And it was rough. It was rough. There were many days where I was like, okay, this isn't worth it. This is too painful. But I wish there was a better fairy tale ending to that relationship, because there's not. But I do feel like that relationship forced me to find the best version of myself, because I was so committed to it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I still now believe that man got the best version of me that any man I've ever dated has. Okay. And at least I can say that. But that was kind of that part of that motivation. I'm like, I need to find a husband. And if I'm going to find a husband, I need to be wife material. And I need to be someone that can be vulnerable. And that actually was probably the first part of it. It was, how can I be vulnerable with people?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what really started it all.
I love it. I love it. And I can, like, as I'm hearing you say things, you know, your past relationship, I don't know too much details. We can go into it. But saying, you know, that past relationship, he got the best version. I wish my story had a fairy tale ending. And again, I feel it in my heart. I feel it in my spirit. You're going to have the fairy tale ending. You're just not there yet. Trisha, when and my sister's a witness to this, and so are many others, when you heal internally, you bless those around you, because now that you're healing, it's going to spread to those around you. So that relationship, like right now, I feel like the Lord is putting you in a place where it's like, Jesus wants to court you. And I feel like in that relationship, he's going to prepare you for the one that's to come. So you're saying, like, I wish it had one. And I'm telling you, guys, mark it. This is video. There's no way we can change the time dates. I can't say a year, 2 years. I don't know. But, like, we will look back and say, Mike was right. Look at the fairy tale that she's living now. So we're going to witness that.
Thank you.
This relationship that you're mentioning, is this because you have a son?
I do have a son.
What's his name?
Austin.
Austin. How old is he?
Five.
5 years old. If I gave you $1 million for your son,
yeah,
$2 million, $20 million, what would your response be? And I'm going somewhere with this point.
Okay, I'm like, the responses could go 100 ways. I can be the responsible response, which is I would invest it all, and that would be his college fund and hopefully his first house.
No. I'm giving you money, and you give me your son.
Oh, hell no. What? No, there's no number in the world.
That was the response I was waiting for. I'm like, she's thinking about it? Like, you're messing this up, Trisha. You're messing this up.
No.
Okay.
No, I would give everything in my entire life up. And
nothing in this world, if they offer you riches, cars, houses, nothing.
Nothing.
And this is the question I wanted to follow up with that. It's why?
He's incredible. I mean, he's perfect.
What has he done to you in your life?
So he, and I appreciate you digging into that, because if I'm being completely honest, he was the start of the healing. And that is part of the reason I'm no longer with his father. Okay. Is because I felt like when I birthed this child, like, everything became clear. Like, okay, God, you crafted me into this caregiver for him. Mm. Not for these men that I've dated, not for the friends. I mean, I'm still there for my friends, of course, but like, I just felt like he was now my purpose. And that's why God had put me through everything and trained me to be the mom that I am. And I mean, that's when he came out, like when he was literally minutes old, I was like, holy cow. My career at the time was a DA. I was a prosecutor. And in that minute, I was like, oh, I'd kill for this kid. Mm. I would spend my entire life in prison if it meant I could ensure his happiness. Like, wow. I would do anything for this thing.
Wow. I bring it up because it's like there is, and if you notice, guys, there's almost like no words to be able to describe. It's difficult. Like, you can say, like, I will do this, I will do that, I will do this, and it still falls short to the reality of the love, the reality of the connection, the wholesome that he brings. And I love it because it doesn't mean it works like this for everyone, but like, my sister tells me that Abby came and saved her life. Yeah. You're telling me this, and I'm like, man, God, like, kids really do. I tell people my truth, where honestly, my kids are the biggest reason why I'm still pushing to.
Yeah.
Because maybe if there weren't any kids, I kind of don't even want to think.
Yeah.
But I'm a human being. Thoughts do run through my head.
Of course.
I, like everyone else, I don't fake it. I don't try to say like, oh, I've never had a suicidal thought. I've had them.
Yeah,
I've had him. Doesn't mean I'm active or I'm trying to. It's just the enemy. That's how he works. He gets you at your lowest and tries to, like, you know, convince you or and some people fail or whatever. Right. Anyways, that's another discussion. But it's a love that you can't describe. Now, if you don't mind, I am a little bit intrigued. Like, what happened in the relationship that made you feel like it just wasn't working out after his birth?
It started before his birth.
Okay.
And so Austin's father has...
You were with him for how long?
Not very.
Okay.
Austin was definitely a surprise. And in fact, I didn't necessarily see the relationship progressing. And then surprises happened, and so we decided to try. And I definitely played a caregiver role in his life. And then when I got pregnant, I was hit with different hormones and emotions than I had ever felt before. And that was the first time in my life that I don't even think I would call it like a suicidal ideation, but the little whispers were there. I had a very difficult pregnancy, and there were days where I was driving to work and I just thought, like, what would happen if I just, like, hit the wall? And it wasn't like I wanted to die. It was like, maybe my life would be easier if I was in a hospital bed. Like, maybe I wouldn't have to work so hard, or, you know, all these little things. And I came home and I kind of sat him down and I said, hey, like, you're not asking me how I'm doing. And he was like, oh, how are you doing? And I was like, that's not what I'm asking for. And I explained to him like the thoughts that I had had that day and thought about driving into a wall. And he said, you know, I'm not really stable enough to hear that and deal with that. And, you know, to his credit, that was accurate. He suffers from some mental health issues. He suffers from alcoholism. And he was not in a place where he could support me. But I really, really needed that support. And so after Austin was born and I realized this is who all of my everything should go to, I naturally stopped being a caregiver to his father. And that imbalance made it a tumultuous relationship because I was expecting more help. To be fair, I had never really required that help from him. I had not really asked him to step up and do those different things.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen, and we just weren't on the same page.
Yeah, yeah. And one, thank you for sharing. Two, I want to make the point clear. I do it with many of my guests, and I'll do it again. This isn't a bashing session. We're not here to make the father look bad or anyone look bad. I'm noticing the growth in you. That's what I'm focusing on. I'm trying to figure out what sparked it, what changed, what made you click, what started the questioning, what started all these things. So, okay. I mean, totally get what you're saying. Thank you for being vulnerable in the sense of like, I don't know why. I don't know if it's like because now I'm so comfortable being vulnerable, but it's like people don't have the guts to say that thought came into my head. I think that sometimes.
For sure.
Like there's times where I'm on the freeway where I'm like, dude, if I literally just move the steering wheel this way, I can make life easier for a lot of people. The thought comes.
Sure.
Now, then I start fighting it with biblical truth. I start fighting it with what God has in his word, where he tells me, you know, all things are going to work for his good for those who love the Lord. We forget that second part. For those who love the Lord. Now, he won't work all things. And it's like, oh, well, that's convenient until we love him. And it's like, yes, because I'm telling you, man, he's a good father. You love him. He's going to turn it for his good. Anyways, I love your emotional intelligence. I can tell there's an awakening. I can tell there's an alertness of like you're figuring out if this is a trauma response, if this is a response out of need, out of caregiving. Because caregiving, it's something that I speak with my sister too. It's like although you're healing, it doesn't mean you're healed. It doesn't mean you got it all together. You're still going to like have to check yourself. What does Trisha do on a daily basis to kind of check herself and say like, oh man, I just did it again right now?
I probably should have like a daily check-in. I just really try to stay like real with myself, you know? And I think prior to me really working on this healing, I would have certain thoughts or beliefs and I would just be like, oh, I'm not supposed to have that thought and push it away.
Yeah.
Or that's a dumb thing to be upset about and push it away. Mm-hmm. And now I force myself to face it. And sometimes that's super inconvenient. There might be a situation where I don't have time to cry in a parking lot, but like I force myself to do it. And
good. As you're giving all the great pointers that I've shared, and we've never talked before. So it's like, this is the perfect indicator how God truly takes us to a healing pattern. I kind of want to talk about God.
Yeah.
Where was God when you were 13? Where was God when you were 17? And where is God now?
Yes. And I'm glad you asked about the different stages because all of them are different. At 13, God was holding my hand, like right by my side. You know, I was really committed to a church that I had found. The youth group, you know, they were fun. Like they were really, really fun Tuesday night youth group. And then I would go on Sundays as well. And my family didn't go with me.
You would just go by yourself.
I would just go by myself.
How would you get there?
parents would drop me off.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
What was the name of the church?
WAC. It's a Whittier Area Community Church. It's a big one. It was hugely influential in my Christianity because, so my mom was Catholic school raised, and she always explained to me that she felt really forced into it. She felt like she didn't get to choose her religion. And she explained that before she was confirmed, when she was doing her classes, she had asked one of the nuns, like, a series of questions. And the nuns told her, just do this for your mom. Hmm. And she made it her, like, point that my brother and I would never feel like that. So growing up, my family went to church for a few years. I loved Vacation Bible School. I would go to every Vacation Bible School in my area at my elementary school age. And then by middle school, my family was no longer going to church. And again, it wasn't a lack of religion as much as just prioritizing time and sickness and health. And it didn't become a priority to my parents. So they would take me Tuesday nights. They would take me on Sundays. I would do the youth group session. And then I would go and work in the nursery for an hour. And then they'd come and pick me up. And I went to winter camp. And I went to Hume Lake summer camp. And when I was about 16, or I guess 15 into 16, is when the cancer metastasized to my mom's brain. And I didn't go to church as much because obviously we just didn't have the ability to. And there was somebody that I had gone to school with and gone to church with for years. And I showed up. I hadn't been to church in probably over a month, and I showed up for summer camp. And at the buses, this kid came up to me and said, what are you doing here? You don't even go to this church anymore. And I stopped completely after that.
Wow.
I was like, I'm not going to go someplace where I've spent years fighting to get here for my absence to be thrown in my face. And so after that, I stepped away from the church completely. Not from God. I want to be very clear. I stepped away from the building. And I had a lot of conversations just myself and God. My mom and I started getting a lot more theoretical and biblical as well. She had kind of retouched with her Catholicism in the last year of her life. So we had a lot of conversations. And I was also very angry. We fought for so...
At God.
Yeah. You know, we had fought this cancer for so many years. And then there became this point where I realized, like, we're never going to beat it, you know. And she was never once in remission in those 9 years. Like, it was, we would slow the growth, but, like, it spread everywhere. And so I had even asked my mom, like, aren't you angry with God? And the only thing that she told me that she was angry about is she said that she had spent years praying to God to let her live through my brother's graduation. And she said, I wish I asked for years. So I was a senior when she passed. But aside from that, she had no anger towards God.
Wow.
And that forced me to, like, keep up that relationship.
Wow.
Because I felt like if she was not angry at God, and, like, she, you know, once the cancer got into her brain, everything was hard for her. Words were hard for her. Reading, she couldn't read, she couldn't drive, all that. So I just remember thinking, if she's not angry, how could I be? Like, how could I be? But I went to college and didn't jump back into my faith as much as I probably would have liked to. I did start learning about other religions, which I feel like was really beneficial for my overall growth.
Agree.
I think a lot of religions have really important messages, and that a lot of them intersect as well. And so I started learning just kind of some non-conventional religions as well. And then my senior year in college, a friend of mine moved in for the summer, and she asked me to teach VBS with her. She was doing it through a church that that year was a big push for outreach. And so we went to a home in a city that didn't have access to a church. And it was just a backyard in Santa Ana. with kids that had broken English, and the powerfulness of feeling like I was exposing them to Jesus for the first time kind of brought me back. So those 4 years, 4.5 years were, I will say, not dedicated to religion. I don't think I ever lost my relationship with God and with Jesus, but I think I questioned it a lot, and I definitely did not prioritize it. And I don't think I prioritized it for many years after either in the way that I would have liked to.
No. I'm processing it because it's a lot. Thank you for your vulnerability once again. I have a cousin of mine. My aunt passed away of cancer as well. She was 41, I believe. And he shared when she was in the hospital and in her deathbed, he asked his mom. The doctor came in wanting to sign a document like releasing and, you know, like pretty much saying like it's going to happen. And my cousin is like 18, 19 at the time. So physically, he was very fit. And he shares in I have him on my podcast, actually. And he shared that physically, he was at his peak. He was at his strongest. Yeah. But spiritually, he was at his weakest.
For sure.
And that at that moment, his mom was at her weakest, but spiritually was in her strongest. Yeah. And that she told her son, his name is Hector. He's like, Hector, give me the paper. I'm going to sign it. And it's like what you just shared right now about the whole graduation. I kid you not. It's not a, I'm going to be vulnerable. It's not a coincidence. Yeah. I've thought of like those thoughts of like suicide, get out of this world. You know, life is going to be easier if you just weren't in it.
For sure.
God told me in I felt it like not audibly, but I felt it in my heart. God told me, how selfish.
Yeah.
Selfish of you. You don't think your daughters, your sons want to see dad in the stands when they graduate? Yeah. So right now that you said that, it hit a lot because I'm telling you, Trisha, my kids are a big reason why God has shown me your life is not just you. Right. Your life is to serve. I will bless you. You will have joy. You will have peace. You will enjoy life, but we're here to serve.
Yeah.
You're here to show them. So right now that you said that, oof, that was impactful, definitely, to say the least.
I don't think I've ever told anybody that, actually.
Yeah, and you know, it makes me, you know, I want to say sorry for, you know, because your mom, like, she hit it on the head. She's like, I'm so, like, she wasn't probably, it's not that she was neglecting you. She just wasn't thinking where it's like, dude, she wanted to make it to the graduation, but I'm sure she wanted to make it to yours too. Like,
absolutely.
Absolutely, she wanted to. It's just crazy. Like, I think it's beautiful. She's like, I'm so sorry. I wish I would have prayed for yours. I'm like, wow, like, what heart, what love, what impact. Wow. Now, obviously, you also shared where you weren't as dedicated as you wanted to be. Obviously, it was always in the back of your mind. It was always kind of like a back burner. God was always there, but yes. Trisha was doing her thing.
Totally.
Trisha was doing her thing. How has that worked out when Trisha does her thing?
You know, I think that I've had a lot of discussions with people just in life about what we believe God has planned. Because I've had friends who have said every single minute of our life is something that God had planned. And I don't believe that.
I don't.
I think that God has like an overall plan for us and he has a path for us. But he also gives us the ability to wander off that path.
We have free will.
We have free will. And, you know, I think that that has kind of been, like, my life may have looked like a Candyland, you know? Like, I don't have a straight path. And I think that God has never stopped watching me, but has watched me take some loop-de-loops and or shoots and ladders might be a better one, you know? Has watched me climb up really, really high and had to slide back down a little bit. But I'm really, really happy with where I am now.
Amen.
And
which is where we're getting to right now, guys. We're getting to the good part.
Yes. So I actually had a conversation with your sister last week. I met up with her after church, and this is a new church that Austin and I have been going to. I did put Austin in a Christian preschool, so he has the teachings, but he wasn't really at an age before to sit in, you know, the daycare
classroom setting.
Yeah, while I was going to church, and now we are, and we love it. And last Sunday, they spoke about being baptized, and I felt super, like, pulled to the idea. And I was sitting there, and all these thoughts started popping in my head. And this is one of those things where, like, when I say it out loud, I'm like, gosh, that's so silly, Trisha. But I think there are fears that everyone has, which is, you know, how are people going to react to me being baptized? And some of the things that popped into my head were like, well, you've always believed in Christianity and you've always had a relationship with God. So how dare you take away a baptism from someone else? Or, you know, what kind of political reaction is going to happen from this? Because I want to be very clear that I consider myself a social justice warrior. I believe in diversity, inclusion. I believe in equity. I believe in privileges, and I believe that it's our obligation to kind of level the playing field. And Christianity is not always associated with those same beliefs. So it popped into my head, what are people going to think? Is this going to be outside of my character or so whatever?
Mm-hmm.
And as I was having these thoughts, the church started worship. It's like, God, there's these moments where I'm just like, God, I hear you. Like, I hear you. Because the first song that started playing was the song on my middle school alarm clock playlist that woke me up every single day.
You'd be doing that.
And it was The Heart of Worship. And I've always loved the worship songs in church. Like, that has always been my favorite part, you know, obviously aside from the emotional teaching stuff. But, like, I've always felt so in touch with my Christianity through music.
Yeah.
And when that song started playing, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with the lyrics of the song, but it's about how it's so much more than just the song, and about how we need to focus on Jesus and we need to make him the heart of everything that we're doing. And I bawled, like, in this church that I've been a member at for a few weeks and know barely a handful of people, I sat there bawling. And I realized, like, I was being called to do it. And to ignore all the other BS that popped into my head about it, because it doesn't matter. Why do I care if somebody looks at that and says, oh, I thought Trisha was baptized her whole life? Why do I care if someone looks at that and says, oh, I thought Trisha was more liberal than that? Like,
yeah. And even if you were baptized, or even if whatever, like, you can, I've been baptized twice.
Yeah.
Because the first time I did it at a church where you had to do it so that you can participate of the Last Supper, the little bread and the juice. Yeah. So the truth is, I only did it because I just wanted that juice and that
snack.
The snack. That's it. So the second time I did it, I had the understanding of why I was doing it. So I got baptized twice, and people are like, no, actually, I've gotten baptized three times. Wow. I got baptized in the Jordan River in Israel.
Incredible.
So, well, I was already baptized twice, but when we were in Jordan River, the pastor was like, guys,
why not?
We're here. Like, let's just do it. So I'm like, heck yeah, let's do it. You know? So anyways, so right now that you're sharing that again, the initial, see, I love it, because I know God's doing something. I know you guys are listening. I know you guys are listening. God's doing something. The initial response is, I got to do it. And almost instantly, the enemy comes, boom, what about this? What about this? What about this? And it pulls the trigger of, like, I need to stop. Yeah. And it's like, when you silence those voices, you know the answer. You know what you need to do. And it's not a matter of you do it to stand against or opposing someone or some things. You do it because you just know it's the right thing to do. So, wow, I mean, okay, and where are we with this?
So, and, you know, the thing that's kind of interesting to tie it back is because then So again, like so orchestrated by God, like so many things in my life right now feel completely orchestrated by God. And one of them is that my mom's best friend, she was our neighbor growing up. Our backyards share a wall, so we literally would walk into each other's home. She is a very devout Christian, and in the last few months of my mom's life, she would come over every morning and read the Bible to my mom, because my mom could no longer read. And last weekend, when I had all of this, she was with me in church. She had taken Austin on a little adventure, and he had spent the night, and the next day I invited her to come in. And so it was so powerful to have her there and have somebody that really like focused on the religion with my mom to be there while I was having this. And I kind of had just explained to her, you know, I go to a satellite church, and I said, I really, really love the message, but, you know, I haven't had like that emotional session yet. And I don't know if that's because of the video or if that's just because of the topics. So God laughed and then made me sit there crying. But afterwards, when she kind of asked me, like, why do you have this hesitation and why have you never done it before? And I realized it comes back to 13-year-old Trisha, who did not want to burden her parents. My parents, I don't want to say this in a way that sounds negative, but my parents didn't have the capacity to even join me on a Sunday at church. How was I supposed to ask them to attend for me to be baptized and then to take the priority away from my mom and her illness and put it on me? Like, that was the mindset that I created. And it's kind of crazy that I feel like this was the bookend of this like healing process currently, because God was like, no, you're going to do this, and you're going to do this for you. And you're going to do this for your child too, because it is important for me. Austin has enjoyed religion, has enjoyed being a part of it, and I want him to continue to have that. So I was planning to get baptized tomorrow, and I had kind of gone through the process with the church, but I asked about getting Austin baptized at the same time, and they want him to do a course. So because of that, I'm going to wait and do it with him. But it will absolutely be before the end of the year.
Beautiful.
And we're going to do that together.
Beautiful.
And kind of just to tie it all together, I did invite his dad to that, because I want his dad to be involved with him. I want his dad to be involved in these huge milestones in Austin's life. And I do think baptism is one of those.
Well, we're going to pray that when that is taking place, that little tug that you feel, that he feels. I'm telling you, man, God's doing a shift. I don't know what's going on. When I say an awakening is happening, I can feel that an awakening is happening, because there's friendships too that I've invited to church. And this guy, if you see him, you're like, there's just no way he's coming to church. He's at church.
Yeah.
And the Lord's doing some type of work.
Yep.
The Lord is tugging. Yeah. He texts me, what are you doing to me? And I said,
not me.
It's not, dude. And it's beautiful. Fairy tale ending is coming. We discuss all these things. We go deep into the heart, into the emotion, but at the same time, Trisha is a mom, but she is also now a business owner.
I am.
You are embarking on a new journey. Something. Sure am. Have you been a business owner before?
Never. And I never thought I would be, if I'm being completely honest with you.
Mm.
But when I say God is orchestrating so much in my life, this is probably the biggest thing.
Wow.
The last 7 months, I would say, of my life have probably been the hardest next to my childhood. There have been so many mountains to climb that God has thrown at me. And so many of them have been around Austin, Austin's safety and Austin's happiness and Austin's well-being. And I was working, for those that don't know, I was working as a DA in LA County. I was assigned to the Compton Courthouse, which is just over an hour away from where Austin and I live. And a situation occurred that really forced me to recognize that I was too far away if there was an emergency. If there was an active shooter, I want to be that mom that is pushing officers out of the way and jumping over the lines and being told I'm going to be arrested. I don't give a shit. Like, I'm running into that school. I'm saving my child. And I realized that I was too far to ever be able to do that. Mm. And then I started asking myself, like, I loved that job, Mike. Like, I loved every day of that job. But I love my son so much more. Mm. And I had this, like, realization. I remember telling my dad, like, when I die, I don't want deputy district attorney as the first line on my headstone. I want it to be mom. Mm,
I love it.
And if I want that to be mom, how am I going to continue an occupation I love that's not going to prioritize my son in the way that I want to?
That's right.
So I found an opportunity in a law firm. I was promised that it would give me everything I needed and wanted in terms of flexibility, in terms of being able to parent, in terms of working from home. And unfortunately, that was all a myth.
Not the case.
I was painted a beautiful picture, and unfortunately, the person did not follow through on any of that. And I was miserable. I also should throw in the... the relationship with the man, I found out he was cheating on me day two at a brand new job. Mm. So that was a very difficult part. I had left the job that I had worked for 15 years. I knew I wanted to be a DA when I was in high school. I was starting into a new area of law that I wasn't comfortable with. I was dealing with some custody issues with some extended family of his as well. And then the one place that I thought was like my safety net, and that I thought I had done so much good work at healing and becoming this great version of myself, I was forced with thinking one of two ways, which is my best wasn't good enough or he didn't deserve my best. And I struggled, you know, I struggled, and I poured myself into this job, and I just wasn't respected at this job. I wasn't valued at this job. And Austin had two situations where he was ill and I had to take him into the office. And one of the promises that I was made is that I would never have to do that. And so for me, that was it. I decided I needed to make a change that allowed me to be a mom. But if this opportunity promised to me by a friend that I had known for years wasn't going to allow me to do that, no one will. And sadly, that is the reality of being a full-time working single mom. There are not a lot of opportunities that allow me to be my best version as an employee and my best version as a mom. And that's when I decided I need to do it on my own. Mm. And honestly, I thought, we'll just see. We'll just see. Hopefully it'll be enough that I could pay our bills and we could live our simple, happy life, but that I can go to like the assemblies and I can go to the school field trips. That was my priority, and I started playing with the idea, and I started talking about it. I started talking about it with anybody who asked me, how is your job going? Are you so happy? Is it everything you dreamed of? I started being real, and I was like, it's not. It is not. I was not picking my son up until 6:05 p.m. I was rushing home, making dinner, doing bath, putting him to bed, and then realizing that I had no time with my child, which was the whole purpose I had made this decision. So I started talking about it with everybody around me, and everyone was wildly supportive. I'm talking friends, I'm talking family, I'm talking attorneys practicing the exact same field that I'm practicing, judges, doctors, like everybody that I met, and I said, I'm thinking about doing this, said, you need to do it. And so God just kept orchestrating it. And the excuse I made was, I don't have a firm name. I do not want to be the law office of Tricia Halstead. So I shouldn't do it. And one day I realized, what do I care about? Being an attorney, having my own firm, like, what do I care about? And the number one thing that I care about is giving vulnerable people access to legal representation. Mm. Because legal representation is foreign to so many people and so many communities. And I wanted a law firm name that would reflect the necessity of needing an attorney, but like also having somebody that was willing to be that attorney and willing to fight for people. So my law firm is Lawyer Up Legal Counsel. If you get arrested, Lawyer Up. If you get in a car accident, Lawyer Up. If you're being harassed, lawyer up. I mean, it's a common terminology that I think that we all use.
Love it. I love it.
And when I found it was available on the Secretary of State website, I was super excited. And I am. I'm excited. I'm just starting out right now. The clients are pouring in. I'm getting to do really good, meaningful work for people.
Wow.
And I have never felt so rewarded in my life.
Wow.
I mean, I am working harder than I've ever worked. I am working every free minute that I have. But they're my minutes, and I get to pick those minutes.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, I can say, like, God is so, so gracious and fruitful. And I am picking my son up every day from school. He's not going to after-school care. He's coming home.
Wow.
I'm working while he's there. I'm taking phone calls while I'm on the road to pick him up. I'm, you know, and I'm also just being very transparent. Somebody calls me, and I'm in school pickup line. I let them know. Hey, I'm picking my son up from school right now. If you can give me a call back in 25 minutes, I will be at my computer. And no one has a problem with that.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it makes me more...
relatable.
Relatable.
100%.
Everyone has dealt with childcare issues if they're a parent. And so I really just feel like the last 7 months, as terrible and difficult as they were, and... I mean, when you talked about, like, crying, like, I had days where I was on the 405 just hysterical. But I pulled into my parking lot, and I threw on some mascara, and I said, let's go. Like, let's do this day. But I don't think I ever would have considered owning a business had I not been through the last 7 months.
I love it. All of it. I love all of it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. It's not easy. I relate to everything that you're saying. My kids currently are in an after-school program on my days, and I absolutely hate it. I was a stay-at-home father for almost 3 years. I was with them on their minimum days. I was with them in all their assemblies, and it's been a hard transition to give that up.
Absolutely.
It's been difficult. But God has told me, what's the desires of your heart? And I have shared with him, and God has told me, okay, maybe this year is a sacrifice. Maybe next year is a sacrifice. Maybe 3 years is a sacrifice. I don't know how long it's going to be, Trisha, but God has also, I have felt in my heart, God has told me, we're going to go back to that.
Yeah.
You want that? We're going to go back to that. I'm going to bless you. I don't know if it's through the podcast. I don't know if it's through my job. I don't know. But I believe him. And I'm glad that you're getting those days back. I'm glad that it's working out for you. What do you practice when it comes to your firm? Like, what type of cases do you practice particularly?
So my focus is on personal injury cases. So anyone injured, car accident, slip and fall, work injuries. I also take those and do those aside workers' comp. I don't do workers' comp, but I take those and I can run a personal injury case with that. And I also practice criminal defense, anything from misdemeanors to felonies, DUIs, DMV hearings. At this time, I'm not interested in taking on any clients that have accusations of child sexual conduct. That's not something that I think I'm the best person to represent them for as a mother. But aside from that, I'm willing to take any phone call and see if I can help.
Beautiful.
I'm also helping a few different clients with things such as cease and desist letters and then obtaining restraining orders and fighting against false restraining orders.
Got it. Okay.
Like I mentioned, it's really, really important for me to be able to provide representation to people that would not have it otherwise.
Yeah. I love it.
That sometimes comes in the door as not one of my perfectly packaged practice areas. But if I can help, I will always try to.
Which is what I was going to ask, because I'm going to be honest with you. When it comes to court, I am like, I all this is new to me. I hate it. I'm like, what do you mean it works like this and like this and this and this? That one doesn't specialize in this. I'm like, I thought a lawyer's a lawyer. Yeah. Like, what do you mean? So right now that you shared that, not only are we going to share her information, right, guys, but... feel free to call. Yes. There's no wrong question. Even if like you're like, but I'm not sure if she specializes in this, call, find out. at least get the information for her to tell you, no, go to this other place, or let me recommend this, or you know what, let me look into it. Call, find out, see if she can help. Great information. Yeah. Trisha, I'm telling you, man, we marked it already on the podcast. We're going to look back on it a couple years from now. We're going to see where Trisha's at in a year, in years to come. But great story. That's why you were brought here, man. So thank you. Thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for being open to sharing the path that you're going through. Any questions you guys have for me, any questions you guys have for Trisha, reach out. You guys know what to do. The email's there. The comment section's open. I mean, reach out, guys. You connect with us. We connect with you guys. If we reach one person, then we did something. I get laughed at all the time. People judge me all the time, but I get that one email, that two email, those people that tell me, dude, you just gave me the courage to keep fighting for my marriage, to keep fighting for my relationship with God, to keep going for my kids. It's all well worth it, guys. So with that being said, I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. Stay tuned for more great episodes, more great stories. I'll see you guys next time. Peace.